from Tukito LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight, after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again, without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs to 20 grams or less per day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds, and the incidental carbs you find in things like dairy. Moderate protein, scale to your lean body mass, and then fat to satiety. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. I'll be asking my guest each week what their keto looks like to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we can't give you medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor because they know you and your medical history and so have access to the bigger picture. This week's extraordinary women are Katie Kelleher and Vicky Brown. Katie is a 34-year-old from California who works in a job that every nerd girl dreams of. She's suffered from body positivity issues most of her life, but she's trying to turn that around and has even started her Curvy Girl Complications blog to help bring to light both the humorous and serious issues of being a curvy girl. A self-proclaimed prior sugar fiend, she realized something had to be done when sugar and carbs were making her sick. She heard of keto from a fellow volunteer for Grey Save Greyhound Adoptions and hasn't looked back since. She and her boyfriend have both been keto since the end of April 2018. She has been blogging about their experience since day one. Vicky is a 39-year-old Canadian married mother of one living in Japan. As an elementary school teacher, she needs as much energy as possible to keep up with her very energetic kids, not to mention her own 2-year-old. After years of dieting, weight loss groups such as Weight Watchers, vegetarian, finding out about slow carb, paleo, then primal, which led her to hearing about low carb, she finally started lazy keto in April of 2018, together with intermittent fasting. She has lost about 5 kilograms, but regained around 3 of those when she went back to America to visit family. Usually she gains much more than 3 kilos, so this is a bit of an NCV for her. Her goals for starting keto are health related. She's currently fighting off a future type 2 diabetes diagnosis, but losing weight is a nice bonus. You can find Katie and Vicky in a group they've started on Facebook called 2 Keto Newbies. It takes a bit of juggling to record a podcast across different time zones, but it's worth it to get to chat to and bring women like Katie and Vicky together to share their experiences with you. I was touched by their candour and willingness to share some difficult and painful memories. I hope you benefit as much from their stories as I did. Welcome, Katie and Vicky, to the Keto Woman Podcast. How are you both doing today?
Awesome. This is super exciting. I'm thrilled to be on the show. It's amazing. I love listening.
And you're in California, yes?
Yes. So it's finally starting to cool down, which is really nice because we're over 100 degrees most days for the last couple months. So,
wow. Too hot. And Vicky, how are you doing? You're in Japan.
I'm doing great. A little tired, but doing good.
Yes, we've got you at something like 3 o'clock in the morning we're recording. That's the problem with time zones, but you volunteered, so.
This is true. I'm excited as well.
Well, while we've got you, Vicky, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and what led you to look for keto in the first place?
For sure. When I thought about this, I figured it's a pretty long story, but I'll try and make it short. Basically, like many women that listen to your podcast, I've been overweight all my life. The one clear point that I remember starting to see my weight go up was when I was about 7, when my dad died, and it just kept going up every year. My first diet was at about age 11, and I remember eating rye bread and some really dry crackers my mom gave me. At about the age of 18 and around 210 pounds, I was told by my doctor I'll probably never weigh less than 200 pounds. And I took that as a personal challenge.
Nice.
I went to Weight Watchers in my mid-20s. I lost about 80 pounds in about a year and a half, which I thought was amazing, and I still do. Gained about 40 back, despite lowering calories even more and going to the gym religiously for over 2 or 3 years. I think I was at about 1,200 calories a day, and I still kept gaining weight. Eventually, I gave up. I had another life event in about 2007. I moved to Japan, and during that time, I went up and down about 10 pounds, and I found slow carb, which helped me bring the weight gain down a little bit, just slowed it down, but I was still gaining. 2009, I returned to Canada and gained about 15 to 20 pounds in about 1 year. In 2011, I got married, and like most women, I decided to lose weight. I lost 8 pounds for the wedding, and that's when I started learning about paleo. And pretty much threw out my margarine and Weight Watchers bread and started eating actual real butter, started cutting down on carbs, and once again, my weight gain started slowing. My next life event was 2012. I moved to Japan and fully discovered paleo and primal, and my weight gain stopped at 198 pounds. So I was under 200 pounds.
Yeah, so you'd achieved that thing you were looking to achieve back in the day. You were told you'd always be over 200 pounds.
Exactly. Then in 2013, I got pregnant with my first daughter. And unfortunately, there was complications. She was born. She died 4 days later. And that was a huge life event. And everything just no longer mattered. When we started to come out of that, we decided we wanted to try again. And in 2014, I got pregnant with my son. And I was well over 200 pounds, I'd say, at that point. And about halfway through that pregnancy, I got diagnosed with gestational diabetes. And that's when I really started to look at things again and look at my weight, look at blood sugars and so on, and really started tracking. And I'm super interested in tracking things, although I try not to let it rule me, which happens often. But that's when I started tracking blood sugars. I actually was keto for the last month of my pregnancy, mostly by choice because I didn't want to take insulin. And my doctors were saying, you're going to have to. The dietitian told me I had to have a cup of rice for morning, lunch, and dinner. And to me, it doesn't make sense. Obviously, my blood sugars were shooting up high. And I said, no.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how much of that's a cultural thing, because I was told a similar thing after weight loss surgery here, that I had to have a third of baguette with every meal. And it seems to be, you know, rice goes with Japan and baguettes go with France. It seems a bit like they just can't shake that cultural food.
Yeah, no, it was weird because I showed her all my numbers. I said, look, this is what happens when I have even a bite of rice. I take a bite of rice and it was went over 200 after the 2 hour mark. And I was like, that's not normal. And she's like, well, then you just have to take the insulin. I'm like, I don't want to go that route if I don't have to, right? So I argued a little bit with her and, you know, not in a mean way, but she suggests, well, how about bread? I was like, same deal, you know? And so we came to an agreement that I will eat starchy vegetables such as pumpkin and so on. And then I just didn't. I told my doctor and he's like, no, that's fine. We're going to, you know, we'll monitor you as long as your blood sugars are good. You know, you're fine and you're getting enough calories, which I did, you know. And then there was complications with that pregnancy, which landed me in the hospital for 1 month before my son was born. And in that time, I was able to take very good care of my diet because only food coming in was from the hospital. And I just put the rice back. Mm-hmm. And I was keto for that month. The nurses panicked because they saw the ketones in my urine. But the doctor was like, no, you're fine. Your blood sugars are low. Your ketones are low. You're fine. You know, and I said, is the baby okay? And baby's fine. You know, no problem. And that's when I learned about Lily Nichols. I read her book, downloaded it on my Kindle, and I read it at the hospital several times. And so I felt really armed, you know, ready to go. You know, if the doctor came up and said, well, you got to stop doing this. It's dangerous. I'm like, no, but look at this research. And so that's, I think, the first time I really found keto. And it was kind of by accident. I knew about low carb, but that's the first time I really found it. After my son was born, my doctor told me, because of the gestational diabetes, chances are you're probably going to get diabetes in the future. You know, so just be aware. And I said, well, you know, do I get a follow-up? They're like, nope, just be aware. I'm like, okay. So I got pregnant again. Unfortunately, I lost that pregnancy, but that pregnancy made me check, you know, my blood sugars again. And they were going up. They were pre-diabetic stage. And I said, nope, not going to happen. And like I did with the previous doctor, this is a challenge. I'm going to do it. And I'm not going to let myself get to that point. So that's where I am. In April 2018, I actually started doing intermittent fasting and very low carb, not quite keto. And then in June of this year, I took a 30-day challenge and I ended up losing about 10 pounds. I was pretty happy. And then I went on vacation to the United States and I tried lazy keto and I ended up gaining about maybe 6 pounds, but feeling good, you know, came back and I'm back on the wagon, if you wish, and looking forward, see what happens. And yeah, I don't know what else to say. I'm hoping this time works.
Interesting. What landed you in Japan in the first place?
It was an interest in Japanese history. And then I was told you can actually work in Japan as an English teacher. And I didn't think I could do it, but, you know, here I am. I did it the first time in 2007. I really liked it. There were some things that happened that it made me have to go back to Canada. And when I was back in Canada, I was like, nope, you know, I'm going to go back again. And so the second time I came back with my husband. So not regretting it. Been here for quite a while. Definitely enjoying it. And don't know when we're going back home, but I'm sure we will.
Right. Yes. I mean, culturally very different from the States. But in general, the Japanese eat very well, don't they?
They do. But an interesting thing I've noticed this time around, I'm actually in Hokkaido, so the Northern Island, very heavy in agriculture. Diabetes seems to be on the rise, type 2 diabetes. I'm seeing it more. I'm starting to see more obesity than I did in 2007. And I mean, for Japan, it's not much, but having been here over 10 years ago and then being here again, you see it. And I was recently told that actually the agricultural system in northern Japan tries to follow the American agriculture. So they send farmers to America to study and then bring that back to Japan. And I don't know if there's a connection there, but I know there's a lot more food from North America coming back to Japan, a lot more processed food. The Japanese still eat a lot of homemade food, but I'm starting to see, you know, a slight switch to the way of eating back in North America.
Right. That's interesting. And that's the difference you've noticed between the, you know, the two times you've lived there.
Yes.
Because it sounds like, yes, it's just this increase in processed food. And probably part of the reason there hasn't been a dramatic increase that you've noticed in the obesity and the type 2 diabetes is because they've still got that home cooking that they do, which I think limits it a bit.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Yes, I think it's the same thing here in France, actually. I've seen similar changes. So Katie, tell us a bit about you, your story.
So I'm 34 and I live out here in California. I've been out here most of my life. I have lived in Europe a bit. As far as weight goes, I've fluctuated throughout my life. The most I've ever weighed is 220 pounds. It's kind of been off and on, and my battle has more been with body issues around the fact that I was 5'8 at 12. My puberty went from 0 to like 7 million, so I didn't really have that in-between time of where a lot of girls have of like, okay, well, I'm starting to get boobs. Mine went from, oh, I don't have any, to, oh my God, how much do I have right now?
Yes, you had no adjustment period. So it just
I really
there.
Didn't. And my mother didn't either. So I feel a little bad for her about that. And I had really horrible issues with my period. And so I've been on birth control kind of since then, which I know a lot of people don't think is the best, but I'm too scared to change really. But I used to, I worked in a giant candy store, I kind of technically still do for the last 6 years. I absolutely love sugar. In fact, my Easter request from my boyfriend was, please, can I have every flavor of Peeps that you can get me? And if some people don't know, because I don't think they're in England, they're like marshmallow chicks or pumpkins or whatever the seasonal thing is. And he not trying to, because I asked, he gave them to me because that's what I wanted. And all of a sudden, I don't know if that kicked me over or I started breaking out in hives, feeling nauseous, all these sort of getting super bloated anytime I ate carbs, sugar, anything like that. And this had happened to me once before when I was in, I think, university is the best way to put it since we call it college. And, I had cut out dairy and, gluten at that point, and I dropped 30 pounds in a summer, and I was super happy and I felt so good, but I don't remember why I changed back. I think it was just, you know, you're at uni and there's free food everywhere, and it was a little bit difficult to keep that up. It's always been hard for me since I am so tall, and I mean, at least for, I guess, above average for a woman. So I didn't always quite fit in. And then being super curvy from a young age, I went through so much of getting made fun of and people just being absolutely nasty. And so it's only in this last year or so, that I've really kind of accepted myself for just kind of my body type and realizing there's nothing wrong with being built anyway, really. So in helps with that, I started my Curvy Girl Complications blog to both kind of show the light side of situations and also the serious side that, like, a lot of people don't like talking about. Because I think it's important, and it's what I love so much on here, is you get to hear these stories that no one talks about. And it's, I think, in order to bring light and to fix things, you have to talk about it, even if it hurts. So I've been sexually assaulted multiple times and going through, you know, had a very difficult childhood with a very nasty father. And so, you know, both my posts are fun for like the silly things of like, oh, you know, this is why my jeans don't fit. And I really wish, you know, like, some women can wear those really nice gladiator sandals. My calves are too big. I can't even zip them up over the bottom of my leg. So some things are funny and some things are serious, because I think in this world, we need to make sure that everybody's aware of all the problems. And I don't think it's just curvy women, and I don't think it's skinny women. I think it's everybody. It's men and women. And it can't get better unless we talk about it. I volunteer for Gray Save Greyhound Adoptions out here in California, and have done for the past several years. And I noticed that one of the women who I volunteered with for years all of a sudden looked amazing. I was like, oh my gosh, you look, you know, what did you do? And you look great. And she's like, I feel amazing. I'm doing keto and get to eat bacon and do all this stuff. And, you know, I was feeling sick and gross and no matter what I did. And I was just really upset. I was personally, and I never had the tests to show it, worried that I was pre-diabetic just because of the amount of sugar and carbs that I consumed. It was rather insane, and I'm sure extremely unhealthy. And so she was talking to me about it. She's actually who introduced me to the two keto dudes. There was also a gentleman that I volunteer with who had tried keto. It didn't work as well for him, but he said, you know, it did do well when he did it, but it was hard for him to sustain. So I kind of jumped in completely into the deep end. It's like, okay, I've got to do all this research and we listen to all these podcasts. And meanwhile, my boyfriend is, you know, we're just happy to do whatever because I'm the one who likes to research and plan and track and do all of this. And he's like, okay, well, what is this? And I was like, well, we get to eat butter and bacon. And he's like, well, that sounds great.
I mean,
so we started, we kind of had a last hurrah because he took me to Disneyland for my birthday for 2 days. And I absolutely love churros. So I wanted I wanted to do churros, full well knowing that I probably shouldn't have, but I was like, you know, I'll be okay. So we started end of April. Since then I've lost 17 pounds and he's lost 44. So it's, there's been, you know, just learning and adjusting and, I'm signed up for, and hopefully we'll start soon doing the Primal Health Coach certification because I'd love to be able to help other people as well. I think that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
And tell me a bit more about the greyhounds. I'm a bit biased here because at the moment I have a deer hound, which is obviously in the longhound category. And I previously had two lurchers and, three actually. I had a Saluki cross too. But my sister had a rescue greyhound for a long time. And they're fabulous dogs, aren't they? It must be great to be surrounded by them in the rescue center.
Yes. So, well, my boyfriend and I were just discussing a dog. My last dog was a greyhound that I had with an ex-boyfriend. And sadly, I did not have the capability to take care of it when we split up. So he has it, but he takes extremely good care of it. So he's in a very loving, well taken care of home. I was living at my parents and, he wasn't as well trained as their dog. So it just wouldn't have worked, but I kept volunteering because I love animals and, I'd found out about greyhounds through a friend who actually is keto as well and who I'd kind of first heard about on Facebook years ago and had asked her questions. And it was sort of in the back of my mind. And she's also one who introduced me to greyhounds and to this organization. So about once a month, I'm there for almost a day and they bring in greyhounds from Mexico and get them all ready and put them in foster homes to go to a new home. And I took my boyfriend this last time and he fell in love with them because it's hard to explain to people that a lot of times the dog breeds personality if you haven't seen them. It's like, oh, well, you have to run them all the time. It's like, well, actually, no, they're sprinters. They're not distance runners.
There's a lot of misconceptions, aren't there? People say greyhounds. Oh, goodness. Surely you have to be walking them all day, every day. No, they're the laziest creatures you've ever met.
They're called the 45-mile-an-hour couch potatoes. With my last one, I would take him on like mile-and-a-half, two-mile jogs in the morning, but none of it was a dead sprint and it wasn't consistently jogging. So by the time he got home, he was like, okay, it's nap time until like two. You know, it just doesn't, they're just so sweet and they so lazy. People are just like, no, you have to do this. Like, no, you really, some of them, I mean, like all dogs, some are different and some will require more energy and they would be in a better home if there's a backyard and there's the other dogs to play with. But a lot of them you can have in apartments, which people think is insane because they can get up to 90 pounds and be like 2.5 feet tall. But so long as, you know, these ladies at the Grey Save are amazing and they know what dog is right for what home. And so while some people think it's a lengthy process, it's not. They're picking the exact dog for you, for your home, for your situation, because that's how much they care about what they're doing. So I really enjoy getting to work with them, and it's something I look forward to every month.
Yeah, they're so laid back. I mean, you know, the deerhound I've got is the same. I mean, you know, they're so laid back. They are just horizontal all the time, pretty much. I mean, don't get me wrong. They love their walk. So mine's a very old lady now, so she doesn't go very far at all. But they all love their walks. And my Bracken, I used to sometimes take her out running behind the car. She used to really like having a good long stretch that I could, you know, that I had to be in the car to be in something that she could that she could run properly behind and get fast enough. Like you say, they're sprinters, and some of them, you know, like she was a bit more edgy and a bit more active, and probably because she wasn't pure greyhound, you see, she was a lurcher, so it was the terrier and things that were in her, I should imagine, that made her a little bit more hyper, and she was a bit more, could do long distances and would quite happily sort of run all day, really. But they've all the ones I've had have just been so laid back. They really do make great family pets, don't they?
Yes, they're really wonderful. And I was really glad to be able to take my boyfriend to experience it and to sit with one. And he got to be, they're called handlers, sit with the dog and take him for walks and take him, you know, to get their bath and their nails clipped. And so he really got to see what they were like during the day. Some are very talkative. One just slept the entire time. You know, others are, you know, Houdinis and trying to escape out of their little X pen that you've got them in. And so they have, even while they are so laid back, they all have very unique personalities.
And that's what you're saying is so interesting. And it sounds like, you know, the center that you work with really get it. Like you say, they have this process, but they really know the dogs and they need to really get to know the humans so that they can make a perfect match.
Yeah, they do. It's fantastic. And they take such good care of all the animals. And, you know, so donating my time to them when it's, you know, that's what they need, is that obviously all nonprofits need donations, but they also need time donations. They need people willing to do things. And I do my best to do social media for them because I'm kind of in the younger crowd of the group, which there's nothing wrong with, but they don't quite understand Instagram and Twitter. So I do my best to try and help with that, even if I'm not quite as consistent as I would like to be. But it's a wonderful way to spend time.
It makes a difference, actually, doesn't it? I've seen different centers coming up on my newsfeed, and I can't remember who it was now, but a photographer who volunteers, and he did the same thing. He said often they get advertised, as it were, for homes with the picture that's taken when they first come in, and it might not be particularly flattering. And he goes round to centers. I think he was working more with pit bulls, who obviously have a bit of a dodgy reputation, but as anyone who knows them knows what fantastic dogs they can be. And he goes around and he spends some time playing with and taking photos of them to show them in a really good light, because it does seem to make a difference with the adoption process. So I should imagine, you know, you getting involved with the social media side, that these days where everything's on the internet, I bet that makes a difference.
It does. And that's one of my jobs oftentimes at the what the homecomings are called, is I help hold the dog to get the glamour shots, so to speak, that go up on the website. And I also take other photos that are then put up. I basically do a live, not quite live, but on Instagram, I'm constantly taking photos during the homecoming so that everybody can see all the dogs and they see the process and just see how much work goes into these days and how many volunteers there are. And the glamour shots are actually trickier than you would think, because these dogs are extremely strong. And so getting them to, you know, have their head in the right way. It's not, I don't move them. I don't touch them. I'm just holding the leash to get them in the right place. And, you know, they've never seen a toy before. And all of a sudden they hear the squeak and are like, oh my God, what is that? And so it's a fun project.
It sounds like a great outlet. I was just wondering, it seems to be there's this trauma from both of you, that you've both had very traumatic things happen in your life, and I wonder how much you think that's associated with the issues you have around your body image and weight gain and your health. How much do you think that's influenced the issues you have?
For me, I think it's a lot. Part of it is my dad, whom I don't have a relationship with at all. He's a very angry individual. And so whenever we would disagree with him, we being my brother and myself, his response was he wouldn't feed us. So if we were on our way to dinner, he would literally turn the car around and take us back home and then not give us dinner. And if we tried to, he would yell at us. Then My mom, however, is the exact opposite. She made our baby food. She was very conscious about what we were eating and made sure it was healthy. And of course, you know, she's doesn't quite understand the whole no carb thing, but she and my stepdad are currently working on Atkins right now. So I'm very proud of them both. It's a big step, especially being older. It's much harder. But my mom, I think, while she didn't mean to, because she's 5'2 and I'm 5'9 and she's petite and I'm curvy, I think the problem is she just didn't know what to do with me. And one day as an adult, I was just like, it occurred to me and I looked at her. I said, Mom, what did you do when I grew and had got boobs? And she's like, I didn't know. There was no book that told me what to do with you. I just, and her mother, my grandmother, who was a wonderful woman, was also could be very negative, and I don't think she realized it. So, you know, if she didn't like the way you looked, it was, oh God, you look awful. And it was, there was no filter. So, you know, I think the girls that I grew up with were much worse than, you know, my mother was not bad. So I think sometimes all of us don't realize how things come off when we say them. But the girls who relentlessly and mercilessly teased me and called me fat and ugly and stupid for almost a decade, really, it was awful. And I didn't want to look the way I did. And I didn't want to have curves. And I didn't want to be smart. And I just would hide myself in baggy clothes. And I think, as for a lot of people, food kind of, especially sugar, for me was like, okay, this makes me feel better. And as we all know, it doesn't actually make you feel better. It's just kind of an instant gratification that appeases you.
Well, I think it, for me, certainly, it didn't necessarily make me feel better, but it was like a numbing sensation almost. It was a way, and I think that happens with a lot of things that have an addictive quality. Why we often do them is to soothe or try and dampen something that's painful, something that's, you know, that's from a trauma that's rearing up. Is to try and dampen that and try not to feel that anymore. And certainly for me, eating those kind of foods, it would push it down, but then it would also send me to sleep. But that was part of it for me, because being asleep meant you didn't have to feel the pain that you were feeling. So it had this sort of double edge with me. There was something when you were eating it, but then it also had that knock-on effect of going to sleep. I mean, I don't know if you know, if you had that too, or if it was just with the physically eating of it.
I think, for me anyway, I'm trying to think. I've been married before. My ex-husband was also a nasty piece of work. I think, like Vicky said, I tried to lose weight for my wedding. I think I successfully lost 20 pounds. This was back in, oh God, 2008, I think. And he was super fit, military, actually British military at the time. He's English, and he just was, I was his punching bag for everything. So, you know, he left he's now American military, I believe. I don't have contact with him, so I don't quite know what's going on. But the amount of times I heard, well, your diet has nothing to do with losing weight and it doesn't do anything. And I'm just like, he left for a couple months for boot camp. All I did was walk, and I changed what I ate, and I lost 30 pounds. I was like, don't tell me my diet has nothing to do with this. Whereas he was the opposite end of the spectrum, who worked out all the time and clearly did not consume enough calories. And I kept trying to explain to him what happens when you do that is you will eat into your muscle and it will cause a big problem. Even I knew that back then after not doing a whole bunch of research, but I think, for me, yeah, it was the numbing, and wouldn't necessarily send me to sleep, but it definitely is relaxing, and then I could calm down and de-stress. So it was, I associated with a calmness that I was having trouble finding elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Vicky? Because, yeah, you called them your big life events, but also, I mean, some seriously traumatic things happened along the way. You know, do you find that food got very much wrapped up with those?
At the time, I didn't know it. Looking back, yes. The fact that I started to see my weight gain after my father passed away is is a, you know, a sure sign in my opinion. I remember reading somewhere, and I can't remember the name or the book, but saying that when you have trauma, your body tries to protect themselves in different ways. And for me, I'm assuming it was by gaining weight. Because I look back, and like I said, when I was on Weight Watchers, I was down to 1,200, you know, calories, and I was still gaining weight. But listening to Katie speak, I was like, wow, there's so many similarities. You know, I only talked about, you know, two major traumas, you know, the loss of my father, loss of my my daughter. And, you know, both times, you know, I dealt with it differently. I think with my father, I was so young, I stopped. Like, my brain just stopped caring. Like, I had no feeling. When I look back, I have no feeling. I didn't actually mourn his death until I was in my 20s. And that's pretty shocking. So that's a long time to be dealing with this and not knowing how to deal with it.
It's probably difficult to remember, but you said you started gaining a lot of weight then, but can you remember, you know, what food was doing for you? It sounds like you were eating more and eating the kind of things that would lead you to put on weight, but can you remember, you know, doing that sort of purposely in a way to sort of dampen the pain? Or can it, you know, like I say, it's a long time ago. You might not remember it. It might be more with hindsight, but it's an interesting thing.
To be honest, I don't remember food at all in that period. It wasn't until the weight was gained that I started being aware of food.
Right.
So I'm not sure how I dealt with it in regards to food, but the weight gain came at that time. And I do come from a family where food isn't not an event, but like, my family's Mexican, and so when we eat, it's a gift. It's a, you know, I'm given food to show love, you know? And so I wonder if that's what was going on at that time, because I did move back to Mexico with my mom after my dad died. We sold everything. We went back to Mexico. And so it's possible that that's what was happening at that time. I don't really remember. Though now that I'm talking about it, I do remember there always being chocolate in the house.
And it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? You know, you're obviously needing a lot of love at that very traumatic period in your time. And sometimes if that's other people's way of
showing it,
other people's ways of showing it.
It's quite possible. One of you mentioned about, you know, turning to food for the numbing effect. And I just was suddenly reminded in the, about 2004, I had a personal, not falling out, but my mom and I, she has been pretty much the only family I've had in Canada for a long time. Of course, I have my aunt, but my mom was the one that was always there after my father died. And in about 2004, her and I had a disagreement. And, you know, I don't really want to get into it, but it was really tough on both of us. And at that was around the time that I was on Weight Watchers. So I had lost all the weight. I was trying not to use food as comfort. I actually turned to alcohol. And I didn't become an alcoholic, at least not that I'm aware of, you know. But really eye-opening, my mom found me passed out in my room with a bottle of vodka empty. And obviously freaked her out. And she talked to me about it. I mean, she didn't know how to approach it. No, I thought it was fine. I just woke up. I'm good. And that was another time in my life that was really tough. And I didn't have the food to turn to. And in hindsight, obviously, I turned to alcohol. Luckily, that was caught really young, really quickly. And, you know, it hasn't happened again. But that was really scary, too. And so like you guys said, you know, regards trauma, we turn to things. And when something's not there, you turn to something else, right? So there is a feeling.
Exactly, and there's a lot of transference between addictions. So of course, somebody who's, know, going the other way, if they've had an addiction to drugs or an addiction to alcohol, often, yes, coming off that, they manage to deal with that addiction, but then it often becomes a different addiction and it becomes food. And things that we can potentially turn to, you know, different addictions are going to have different substances are going to have different levels of addiction course, for each of us, aren't they?
Of course,
So, it might have been that, yeah, the alcohol was something you turned to, but it was something potentially that was, that in some ways was easier to solve. I don't know, but yes, it's just interesting, this numbing effect, isn't it? You know, some people look on taking your drug of choice, whatever drug that is, be it food or alcohol, whatever, as a way to get high or as a way to get happy or whatever. Yeah. But I don't think it is. I think it's the complete opposite. I think it's a way to switch off pain.
In hindsight, most definitely. I mean, I look back at all those times and that's what it was. It just, you know, I felt happy at the time. I felt good at the time. But it was a way to just shut out, you know, leave your current life. And I had this problem too with video games even, you know, just it was a way to get away, you know, from my life, which at the time sucked, you know. So, you know, when people say, you know, weight gain or fat people, you know, they're just, it's just calories in, calories out. And I said, no, there's so much more to it. And I mean, going keto is just one little aspect of a whole, you know, range of things that, you know, I still need to deal with, you know. So no, it's not just calories in, it's not, you know, it's, there's so much more to it. And you know, you got to be able to face it, to deal with it, to come to terms with it, to be able to start moving forward, you know, whether it's by diet or lifestyle change or whatever, you know. So
although you've both dabbled in different things, we decided it'd be great to talk to you both because you're relatively new to keto and find out about that early experience. But do you find, I've certainly found that by eating this way, it has really helped my mood and depression and different things I deal with, and makes it, actually, you were talking about when you just mentioned there about facing things, it makes it easier to start tackling those emotional issues. Have you found that since you started keto, that it's a bit easier to start tackling these issues?
I think for me it has been, but I think I started, my blog was kind of the start of that before keto, just kind of realizing it helps to get it out there. And I'm sure I don't have a big following, which is totally fine. It's not necessarily done for other people, but if it does help somebody else, that would be great. It was done for me. And with keto, I'm autistic as well, and on the high functioning spectrum. And so I literally overthink everything, which I really wish I didn't. And people are like, oh, just stop. I'm like, you don't understand. But with keto, it's a lot easier for me to calm down and remain calm, and then while still somewhat overthinking everything, because that's a tendency, it's easier to process the information a little bit faster. And I noticed the mood changes right away. And of course, I'd done, you know, reading and listening to the two keto dudes. Everyone's like, I think the big one that I didn't get for weeks and weeks and weeks is I was starving all the time for at least 5 weeks. And people are like, oh, after you're fine after the first week. My boyfriend was fine after the first week. It took me 5 weeks and then probably another additional month or so before I could even consider intermittent fasting, because I was so used to that you need 3 meals a day and 2 snacks a day. And then I was starving in between all of those.
Isn't that interesting though? Because a lot of people, you know, they talk about protein and fat being so satiating, and that's often one of the things, isn't it? Okay, the first week or something, but after that, people are saying, well, you know, oh, I just couldn't face anymore because it's so, I feel so full. But no, I, you know, it's interesting that you weren't getting that so much. You were really hungry.
My theory, and I did post this on the ketogenic forum, and I would be welcome to be corrected, is I think part of it is when you're switching from sugar to fat, you have to burn a lot of those sugar stores. If you saw the amount of sugar and carbs I ate, I'm not surprised it took me so long. I think I probably had such a big buildup of all of that from chocolate and marshmallow. I mean, if it has sugar, I would eat it. There are very few things that have sugar that I didn't like. So my boyfriend's just not a sugar person. So my theory was maybe, okay, well, I maybe have all this extra stuff that's been stored that needs to get burned off before I can successfully switch to doing fat. And now that I have, you know, some nights I come home and I'm hungry and then I just grab something fatty out of the fridge and I'm fine. It, you know, and I'm sure we'll kind of talk about our process later, but it's just, I think some people are not as aware as the process is not the same for everybody. And I think sometimes we stress, okay, well, counting is bad. If I didn't track and if I didn't change my macros and I didn't do this, I wouldn't be sitting here. I am not a person who cannot, I can't just not look at things, not have a scale, not, I can't. I just, and I think it, you know, we keep stressing more and more, which I think is excellent, is if you need that, please do it.
Absolutely.
Please do what you, the tools to make yourself successful. And please stop listening to the people, because it's not going to stop, really. Everywhere you go, people are going to, well, you don't need to do that. I'm aware that I don't need to, but my personality is such that I have to. Because if I want to be successful and do this the right way for me, I have to do this, or I'm going to end up gaining all of my weight back and more, because I can't have that as a, you know, constant thing the whole time.
That's absolutely where it's so important, isn't it, to know yourself and to really get this message across that there is no one way. So there'll be someone else who says you absolutely have to track and you're not going to succeed unless you track. And there'll be someone who's, you know, the opposite of you, who doesn't want to track, who, you know, they might do it for a while, just when they get started, but they really don't function well having to do that. And they think, oh, I'd rather not do it if I've got to do that. Well, for them, no, you don't need to track. But if it benefits you, if it's something you like doing, if it's something that helps you, then absolutely do it. It's just completely different for everyone, isn't it?
And even within couples, it's completely different. My boyfriend was not hungry after like day two. And I do our macros and I give them to him, but he does what he wants. So if, you know, he oftentimes doesn't come anywhere close to any of them because he's just not hungry. Well, obviously I'm not going to try and force him to eat anything. If you're not hungry, don't eat. It's fine. So I'm closer to my macros. He's usually the complete opposite, but he is very wonderful and kind of lets me say, okay, well, here's your numbers, go. But I'm, you know, I don't check up on him. I don't see what, you know, and sometimes he eats everything, but he feels better eating more protein and hitting that goal. And feels full that way, as opposed to fat, where I kind of feel better the opposite.
How fascinating seeing those two, you know, working together, having that comparison. And that's the beauty of having, I mean, I like to see data. I just can't often be bothered to track it. I mean, I would love it if there was some kind of automatic tracking system, that there was a filter on my mouth or something, so everything got tracked without me actually having to weigh it and do it all, because the data is fascinating, isn't it? And so that's really interesting to see the difference between the two of you. What about you, Vicky? Have you found an improvement already in your mood? And, you know, obviously you've got some difficult things in your past to deal with, although you've got a 2-year-old, haven't you? So probably don't get much time.
I would say, if anything, I found that I keep saying to my family I need to be more patient, but I found I'm a lot more patient now. I'm able to handle some stresses a lot better. Whether that was keto or not, I'm not sure, but, you know, it doesn't hurt to assume that it might be. And so, yeah, I would say mood-wise, I'm doing better. I actually found today, out of all things, I wanted to go outside and play with my son. And usually, I don't want to. I come home and I was like, you know, cook dinner and I'm done for the day, right? So today, you know, coming back from the grocery store, I was like, you know, let's go outside and play in the sandbox, which is not common. And I'm hoping it becomes more common. Usually, you know, I send my son down with my husband to go play. But, so, I mean, there's things, small changes are happening. I've only started truly, like I'd say in June. So things are slowly changing and, you know, I'm starting to notice a bit more energy.
Well, people talk about it being a mood stabilizer and an energy stabilizer, yeah. You know, going from the sugar roller coaster.
Yeah.
to a much more smooth ride on keto. Yeah. And I would have thought that can only help when, you know, when you've got a young child to look after and your sleep patterns are probably all over the place. The last thing you probably want to be on is that sugar roller coaster.
For sure.
So like you say, you've only just started seeing the differences, but it sounds very hopeful that that could have a really serious impact.
Yeah. And if that's all that changes, it's worth it. You know, when you stabilize your mood, when you're in not a safe place, but like when you don't have all these other things going on, it's easier to address other things in your life. So, you know, like I said, if all that keto does is make my mood better, you know, then everything else I'll be able to take a look at. You know, losing the weight, although wonderful, is secondary, you know, and of course, bringing down the blood sugars, that was my main reason for doing it. So most definitely, there's a small change. I see small changes happening. And my husband's also doing keto more to support me. He's a slender guy, so he doesn't need to lose weight at all. But he's definitely enjoying the foods we get to eat. So it's something too that I look forward to maybe asking him later on, you know, how's it going? No.
They're the important things that really keep you for the long term, aren't they? I always get people to try and really picture and flesh out that image of why it is they're doing this and what they're hoping to achieve. So someone might say, you know, losing weight might be their thing, but so go further than that. You want to lose weight because of what? And it might be, you know, having the energy to play with your child in the sandbox, having the energy to run around playing football. And that, if you can really picture that, that's a much more important reason, isn't it, than
most definitely
just losing a few pounds.
Yeah, most definitely.
So talking about starting keto, as you're both relatively new to it, how did you prepare and how was that first week? Katie, let's start with you.
So I prepared, I would listen to the Two Keto Dudes podcast a lot, and I did some research. I love cookbooks, so I bought several keto books that were also cookbooks. One I bought was like the 30-day plan, and it had different meal plan every day, and I took one look and was like, there is no possible way that I can do this, but maybe I can pick and choose. And I think where some people are overwhelmed by the amount of like, okay, well, this says I have to do it this way. I just looked at it and was like, well, I like these recipes, but I can't commit this time to do all this cooking. It just won't work. So my boyfriend and I kind of sat down together. We cleared out the pantry, which was a little bit difficult because at the time we were not just living. We now have an apartment just ourselves, but we were in a house with two roommates who are not keto. And so we cleared out our pantry, got rid of everything that was ours that we weren't going to eat, and got it out, but that didn't take everything out, which is totally fine. And so we do much better during the week with our schedules of we basically have the same breakfast every day. We make lunch. Our lunch is usually, the same thing. You know, now we have an instant pot, so it's here's a week's worth of meals in the fridge, just grab and go. And that for us really, really helped the transition make it easy. I'd read about the keto flu, so to speak, and it was pretty bad for me, but I knew that what you really needed were you know, salt and electrolytes. So we've been drinking electrolyte water. And I took bouillon cubes to work that I could dissolve in a mug, and I would have that after lunch, and I felt so much better. So while it did hit pretty bad a couple days, and I just started my job, we started keto and I started a new job, and everyone told me I was crazy, and I said, well, if I keep waiting, I'm never gonna do it. So may as well just get it done. And, you know, I have had all the, at that time and for several weeks, had all the good keto snacks like cheese and macadamia nuts and all the things where once I felt hungry, I'm lucky enough where I can just grab a snack at my station and just kind of eat it and then, you know, have the broth and all that. And that helped me a lot. But just preparing by throwing stuff out and just having an idea of like, okay, well, while these recipes are fantastic and we definitely want to use them, bacon and eggs are going to be way easier in the morning for us. So let's just do that. And let's just pick one lunch and have it for the week. And then on the weekends, kind of do whatever.
Sounds like a good plan. And what about you, Vicky?
Well, for me, we were already kind of low carb. I mean, we were doing the primal kind of way of eating. I was already about maybe under 100 carbs a day. I wasn't counting, but, you know, not eating rice, not eating bread. So some of the biggest things we had to do is actually cancel something called Kyushoku. So here in Japan, as a teacher, especially elementary and junior high teachers, you are given the lunch that the kids eat. So you eat with the kids. Right. And of course, that's very carb heavy. And although I never had it, my husband was having it, and he just didn't feel so great. I mean, it's good food in the sense it's traditional Japanese food, which is nice. But like I said, carb heavy. So we had to cancel that. And I was just starting a new job, so like Katie. And I had to go in there and say, hey, I got to cancel this. I cannot have this for health reasons. And, you know, I was a little nervous because some schools, if you cancel it, they don't let you eat with the kids. And that's such a big part of being a, you know, an English teacher is trying to connect with the kids, right? But they were totally cool with us. Just bring your own, you know, bento, as they call it, your own lunchbox. And, you know, we'll use it as a cultural teaching point. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I was very grateful that they were open to that. So that was probably the biggest thing. Other than that, I love cooking. So I love looking up things. And we have some really good friends here, and they love cooking. And so we actually told them, or said, look, this is what we're trying to do. And they're like, cool. So there they go, looking up recipes on websites in Japan. And they started coming over with cloud bread and low carb sweets. And, you know, by sweets, they're not really sweet, but, you know, so that was great to have that kind of support from them.
That was going to be one of my questions, actually, was how have you found dealing with the people in your life? I know that's something that some people find difficult. It sounds like they were all very supportive of you.
Very lucky. I'd say I'm very lucky. My husband is super supportive. You know, the way he says that anything that will keep you alive longer so you could spend with us is, you know, I'm all on board. So he's super supportive. He lets me do all the research. So he takes my word on it. And I said, don't take my word on it. You know, do your own research, you know. But I research for him and I research for myself because we're completely different. Like I said, he's quite thin. He's active. He's always been. I've always been overweight, not as active. So, but he's on board. You know, he's keen on doing it, which is also nice because when it comes to our son, we're on the same page about what to feed him. He's not keto. I mean, he's still a little guy, and he gets his Kyushoku at school, or not school, but, you know, at pre-kindergarten or daycare, if you wish. So we can't control that, but we have asked them not to give him too many sweet foods. So, like, the other kids are getting cookies and chips, believe it or not. And I'm like, he's only 2.5. I can't believe you're giving him chips. But anyways, they've been on board, too, and they've been supportive. And I will say the one thing I have noticed with my son is up until he went to the kindergarten, you know, his mood is pretty even. Now that he's there, it's, you know, up and down, but that could be just being separated from us for, you know, a long time. But at home, he eats pretty healthy. I mean, one of his favorite foods is plain yogurt, you know, plain full fat yogurt. He asks for it all the time. His candy, like, you know, some people say is fruit, you know, the other day, like we're kind of, we don't want him to miss out on cultural things, right? So if there's a sweet or something that because of a special event, then by all means, help yourself. You know, I want him to experience that. But the other day we were at a friend's house and somebody brought out a cake. And it's, you know, during the summer, people give out gifts to each other. I'm not quite sure what's going on, but that's what they do. And so somebody had given them a cake and the other kids were eating it. And my friend's looking at me, is it okay? You know, like, it's not okay, right? And I said, well, let's do it this way. If he asks for it, let him have a piece. And he saw the other kids eating it, and he looked at it, and he went for blueberries, and then walked away. I was like, awesome. You know, so I feel like we're doing something right. And my biggest thing is I didn't want my son to grow up with the same problems I did, weight-wise, which is also why I was so strict when I was pregnant with him. you know, after I did research, you know, what happens if I eat too much sugar, you know, he gets inundated in his own little insulin bath and that sets him up for type 2 diabetes later. So I was like, no, I don't want to set him up for anything horrible, you know? So he was sugar-free, almost sugar-free for the first 2 years of his life. And
fabulous. And I think if you keep that, you know, that sort of moderation type balance, you don't necessarily have to go to any kind of extremes to rectify something if you don't
exactly,
have those issues
yeah,
in the
yeah.
first place.
He does yeah. love rice, though. So we do have that issue. You know, he loves rice or the rice balls. He's always asking for those. But he knows we don't have that in the house. We don't have rice and we don't have bread in the house. And he knows that. So when my friends come over who make him rice balls, he always goes into their bag and starts looking for rice balls. But I mean, you know, he's two. It's okay, you know. But yeah, so now everybody seems to be on board. In my close friends and so on, we don't see our family very often and we don't get to talk to them very often. So they're not 100% sure what's going on in our diet. And, you know, although they're aware that I'm trying to keep eye on my blood sugars and so on, I'd say that's about it. Yeah.
Right, but they don't have as much impact anywhere.
No,
what about you, Katie? It sounds like you have a fairly supportive environment as well, certainly your immediate environment.
Our friends, I think we're a bit crazy, but, you know, Chris walks in after not seeing them for a long time, and he's dropped 45 pounds since we started, and everyone's just like, whoa. So it does start that conversation. We did have a set of friends who were interested in doing it. Their wedding is coming up at the end of the year. But it is so-called extreme thing to do. I think it scares a lot of people. And it's totally fine if it's not for them. You know, we answered all their questions and said, if you want any other information, we'd be happy to talk to you. We kind of left it at that. My mom, she's very supportive if it works and it makes me happy. And she's always asking me how much weight I've lost, which it doesn't bother me. I have one of those smart scales that does body composition and everything. And for me, that's an extremely useful tool, but I don't let it control me. So if I go up a pound, I look and see, okay, well, is that muscle? Is that fat? You know, what exactly happened? And then just use that information and then don't get upset, because in the end, I feel so much better that it doesn't matter. My stepdad has since started Atkins maybe almost a month ago now. And he's done extremely well. My mom, hopefully she forgives me for saying this, but felt guilty that she was eating things he wasn't, and so has since modified her diet, and she's been losing weight as well. Most people are really understanding. You know, my sister invited me over for pizza one night, and I said, well, you know, I can't do that, but I've already eaten, so please order the pizza, and I'll sit and have a conversation with you. Not a problem. Work, vegan is really big deal at work. We have an amazing workplace. They just opened a vegan cafeteria for all of us. So I have access to a salad bar. It's great. But oftentimes they'll bring in like breakfast or donuts or something. And they're like, oh, but Katie. And I said, look, I made a dietary choice. You guys do what you want to do. I'll be fine. Like, I don't want you changing everything just because I've made a personal choice. If you want the donuts and you want the breakfast burritos, by all means, please bring them. And if I can't find something on the menu, don't worry about it. I'll have already had breakfast. It's fine. So it's...
Exactly. That's often not the problem, is it? It's not the problem with people eating something you don't want to eat. It's just sometimes people try and sort of force you to join in. And I think just with people being cool about you not joining in if you don't want to, that's all we need, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think some people in all different lifestyles can very much be, well, I'm this way, so then you need to cater to me. And I think it's important to recognize that we've made a choice. That doesn't mean that everybody else is going to understand our choice. Or, you know, if we had a team breakfast, I would certainly do my best to bring something keto. And I still have gone and sat with everybody in these events where I can't eat anything that they are serving. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. I don't feel hungry. I don't feel sad. I don't feel that I wish I could be eating what it is, but you can get the community without eating the food. So it's It is possible.
And that's part of the benefits. We can often, you know, we can, especially once we've been doing it for a while, we can skip a meal without it being a huge problem anyway. We are both researchers. What are just a few of the online resources that you found really helpful that you could share for other people thinking about starting or people who've just started?
For me, one of the biggest ones was the Two Keto Dudes podcast. I think it was amazing. And then by the time that I got to them, the Facebook group had already closed and the forum had opened. So, or at least I have to start everything from the beginning. So I started from episode one and it took me 4 months, 5 months to get to the, you know, get it done. And that was really helpful. And literally every single book that anybody mentioned on that show, I wrote down. So I have this list of books to read. I'm currently reading The Salt Fix. And I think the one that I would recommend to everyone, regardless of whether you're doing keto or not, is Why We Get Fat. I think it's an incredible book. And it's a scientific book, but not written that way. And it really helps explain what's going on. So, you know, that for me was great. And the forum.
It gets cited a lot, that one. It's one of those when I'm asking people what made that change, that's often the book that they read that made the change, or someone recommended that book. So yes, it's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, my stepdad read that one, and for Father's Day, his gift was an Amazon gift card for books, because, you know, parents are so hard to shop for, I think, at any age. And So I gave him a list of recommendations of the books that the dudes had recommended, and he'd already bought three of them. So it was really neat to see that, you know, he's gotten interested, and he's a doctor himself. So I'm very lucky to have a doctor in the family who is on board with what I'm doing and understands it and is, but the ketogenic forum is beyond, you know, I was curious. I just got a new tattoo the other day, and first tattoo after going keto. And I was like, I wonder if anyone's posted about this. Sure enough, type in tattoo and here comes up a whole different.
Exactly. Yeah. The search function works really well, doesn't it? And talking about books, I believe there's a great post about favorite books that people have found on keto that just keeps getting added to. So it's a great resource, isn't it? It's this fantastic library of all sorts of things that are easy to find.
Yeah, the forum is fantastic.
And what about you, Vicky? What online resources have you found really helpful?
Well, I haven't really been active in the forums, but that's actually how I found you, was through the forums. But I'd say some of my favorite websites or online resources is, first of all, Dr. Fung, all his videos he has. I started watching those a few years back, and I'm like, who's this dude? But what he was saying made sense, you know? And so I've been watching him for a while.
Have you watched that great long? I think it's a 7-episode series,
yes.
The Etiology of Obesity.
Yes, that's the one I was
yes,
watching.
Me too.
You know, and sometimes my husband would be like, well, where is he? Looks like a library. Is this for real? It's like, I don't know. But you know what? What he's saying makes sense, you know? And then suddenly he's everywhere, right? So I've read all his books. Tim Noakes is another one. Anything he posts, I will read. Actually, I was in the hospital with my son when the Tim Noakes trial was happening, or when he was starting to go to trial. So I watched the whole trial, not at that time, a few years later, I watched the whole trial. But anyways, dietdoctor.com, another great resource I like going to. I went into their free membership for a month, watched all their videos, great stuff on there. And, you know, not to keep plugging the Two Keto Dudes, but I've listened to all their podcasts and, you know, it's just great. In that case, with the Two Keto Dudes, it's great to find somebody who's been there, you know, and who is still going through it, still learning, and has such a passion for it. So, you know, I love listening to them. And
that's the real beauty, actually, of starting from that episode one, isn't it? Because you start with Carl and follow through.
That's wonderful. And then books, like Katie was saying, every book that I've heard, I've pretty much gone to my husband, hey, can we get this book? So my Kindle is like full of books from Dr. Fung. Lily Nichols was a great one when I was pregnant. And there's tons of stuff out there. There's tons of stuff. You go through it, you weed out what's good for you and what's not. And then finding your tribe, like finding a group of people that you can connect with. Like I've been a part of a few Facebook groups and left a few because, wow, I was like, man, you guys are mean. You know, I don't need this in my life. But finding, you know, that one group of people and, you know, and connecting with them, and that is half the battle. You know, when you find them and you can ask questions without somebody saying, read a book, you know, or go look it up, Google, you know, finding someone who can, you know, or a group of people that can talk to you because they're also learning is great. So, you know, I don't know where to point people for that, but just keep looking. There's groups of great people.
Well, there are so many groups, aren't there? That's the thing. You can join as many as you like and leave the ones that you don't get on with. And,
yeah,
you know, just keep trying. You know, I find that's one of the things I love. You know, my Facebook group, the women in there are just so fabulous. And that finding your tribe, it's really important, isn't it? And does make a huge difference.
Most definitely. I'm still looking, but, you know, I'm sure they're out there.
Oh, definitely. Okay, so we need to wrap up really. But is there just one question I thought would be interesting to ask is, you know, if you could go back and start again, is there anything you'd change? I mean, you're still both relatively new, but, you know, you've learned a fair bit already. Is there anything that you'd do differently if you were starting again tomorrow?
For me, if I was starting again, I was going to say start sooner. But
yeah, just get started.
Yeah, don't stress over it. Like, I mean, I heard about keto some time ago and I just didn't do it. And I would say for me, I would have done more research into it to back myself up, because we do run into people that are like, oh, it's unhealthy. You know, we run into people who are like, oh, you can't do that, or that's not part of the guidelines or whatever. And, you know, just being ready to be, you know, I wouldn't say defend yourself, but to be able to put out an argument, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Just justify what you're doing. Yeah. Just gives you a bit more confidence, doesn't it? Like you say, just stand up for yourself,
yeah.
I guess.
And then the other would be just get rid of everything out of the house as soon as possible. I mean, I still haven't done that and it's tempting, you know, and I've caved. And so I'd say a do-over would be legit just clean everything out of the pantry and start again. You know, it's a new way of doing things. You know, we got to learn it some way or another. But if you keep going back to the old, it's going to be harder and it's going to take more time.
Exactly. And we're human, aren't we? It's very easy to go back to old habits. Yeah. What about you, Katie? Is there anything you'd do differently?
Well, I think knowing what I know now, I'd go on to the keto forums and look at all those beginner threads. While the Two Keto Dudes is wonderful, and while Carl was a beginner, and I absolutely love hearing Richard talk about science, sometimes those shows, while fascinating, are overwhelming with the amount of information they provide. And it's easier, and I'm thrilled that we have a show, you know, we got to do this as newbies, because I kind of wish that there had been like that show where they talk about, you know, hey, this is what happens. And they did do that. But the forums provide all of those answers by so many people, and you can see the spread of differences. And, you know, because my expectations going in were, okay, yeah, the first week or so is going to be rough, but after that, I shouldn't be hungry and this, that, and the other thing. I wasn't expecting to be hungry for over a month. I wasn't, you know, expecting, you know, some, you know, people like, oh, this happened and it's great and I love it. I'm like, yeah, that still hasn't happened for me. But I think just understanding that you need to, I wasn't necessarily upset, but just understand, use them as guidelines. Sure, some people see immediate effects in their skin and their hair and their nails. I haven't seen any of that. And, you know, but that's okay. I did it for health. That would be an added benefit that I would love, but just use everything that anyone says as a guideline, because it doesn't necessarily mean it will apply to you. And I think one of the things I've learned dealing with body positivity issues is just try not to let things turn into a snowball effect. I think it was Karen who gained weight for the first 6 weeks and she just kept going. Don't let one thing turn into another and then another and then another and let you off the course. Yes, it's going to be frustrating. Go to the forums, vent your frustration. Like, someone's going to tell you, hey, this happened to me too. It's okay. It'll get better.
Yes. And that's a very good point. And that's the thing with the forums. It's lost track of where we're at now, but I think there's at least 15,000 people in there. So you can, you know, you go in and put a search, you know, why am I still hungry after keto for a month? There's going to be another post somewhere where someone's been talking about it. You know, it has a good search function. So you can always go in and you can find some of those stories that aren't the stories that, you know, that you see more publicly that people are shouting about, like you're saying, all the fantastic positive things that most of us get to eventually. But for some of us, it's more of a struggle. It's useful to be able to hear that huge range of stories, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fabulous. Well, we're out of time, so we're gonna round off with a top tip from both of you. So Vicky, what's your top tip?
Well, in a nutshell, don't give up. So for me, just keep reminding yourself what's your end goal, and just keep aiming for it. There's bumps and, you know, peaks and valleys all the way from here to your goal, and so just keep that in sight. Don't forget it. And when you know. Fall off the wagon if you wish, just get back on. It's no big deal. It's a small bump.
Perfect. I like it. And what about you, Katie?
Well, I love that you end with a quote. And so one of my favorites is, so many things are possible just as long as you don't know they're impossible. And that comes from The Phantom Tollbooth by Norton Juster. And it's one of my favorite all-time books, which I highly recommend everybody read, even though it is technically a kid's book. But it's just, don't listen to other people saying, hey, you can't do this. Hey, this doesn't work. No, you don't need to track. No, you don't need this. If you know what you need, listen to yourself. It's really hard to do. And I do understand that. I know, coming from many years of experience, it's very hard to believe in yourself and know. But if you are getting a weird feeling, just go with it. If you're like, no, I want that scale that tells me my weight and my body mass, do it. You don't need to make excuses or explain to anybody else. It's what you have to do for yourself. And so long as that you help yourself, nothing's going to be impossible to figure out.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, ladies, for talking to me today. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. It's been fantastic.
To get the resources and links from the show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this exciting adventure and want to help me create new episodes, please go to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast. So please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. Please help other people hear about and find this podcast by reviewing the show on iTunes and Facebook. Every star and review really does help. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support means the world to me. Thank you. For anyone who's thinking about sharing their lives with a greyhound or a long dog, I can heartily recommend it. I've been a housekeeper for 3 lurchers and currently a deerhound. As many of you know, I also have a snorty, farty French bulldog as well, and she's really wonderful. There's something very fabulous, though, about long dogs. They are so gentle and laid back and will bring you way more joy than you could ever imagine. I miss my lurchers very, very much. So if you're thinking of adopting a greyhound, do it. You won't regret it. This week's end quote is from C. Joybell C. We can't be afraid of change. You may feel very secure in that pond that you were in, but if you never venture out of it, you will never know that there is such a thing as an ocean, a sea. Holding on to something that is good for you now may be the very reason why you don't have something better. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.